Dale Carnegie, in his coast-to-coast presentation, Little-Known Facts About Well-Known People. Tonight, Mr. Carnegie will tell us about a well-known gentleman from Indiana, a man who for close to half a century has kept Americans chuckling at themselves. But first, your announcer, Tiny Ruffner, offers just one fact about Lee hats. It actually takes three times longer to make a man's hat by the patented Lee water block process than by ordinary hat-making methods. But as a result of this extra effort, style and smart appearance are built into those Lee hats for keeps. Yes, Lee hats win friends and influence style. And now, Dale Carnegie.
Good evening. Nearly 70 years ago, out in Indianapolis, a little boy used to pray when he went to bed at night, "God bless Papa and Mama, and make Uncle Newton senator from our state." A miracle was performed in Indiana, for Uncle Newton did become senator. And when he died, he left his little nephew a part of his fortune. And it was a lucky thing he did, too. For that nephew, Newton Booth Starkeaton, was 30 years old before he made enough money to buy his own cigarettes. He was 45 years old before his writings brought him up a house. But today, Booth Starkeaton is not only a millionaire, he's regarded as the dean, the great elder statesman of American writers, and the only person living who has won the Pulitzer Prize, not once, but twice, for writing the most distinguished novel of the year. And yet when Booth Tarkington first began to write, he earned exactly $22.50 for 5 years' work. And even that wasn't for any stories he'd written. It was for a couple of drawings he had sold to Life, the old magazine Life. He had been writing 8 years before he saw his name or his stories in print, and he might have kept on writing for several years more without success if his sister had not got mad and raised a rumpus in an editorial office. Here's how it happened. Tarkington's sister made a trip to New York, and unknown to him, she took along with her one of his stories called Monsieur Beaucaire. That story, the first, by the way, he'd ever written, had bounced back so many times that Tark used to say it was written on rubber. But his sister loved it. In spite of all the turndowns, she thought it was superb. So when Miss Hody Tarkington got to New York, she walked into the office of S.S. McClure, the magazine publisher, and said to his assistant, "I've brought you a story, a very good story." And she added firmly, "I should like to have Mr. McClure read it personally by tomorrow and judge for himself." The next day she was back, and a young assistant editor handed her the story. "Sorry, this won't do for us." "But why?" she demanded. "Didn't you like it? Didn't you like the poetic quotations at the head of the chapters?" Oh, yes, gulped the editor. The quotations are good, but..." "Oh, so they are good, are they, Miss Tarkington Storm? Well, there aren't any quotations at the head of the chapter, and that proves that no one has read it. And I'm going to stay right here till that story is read by Mr. McClure himself." And stay there she did, banging on the desk and raising such a rumpus that at last they took her in to see S.S. McClure in person. The following day, a young man out in Indiana got an astonishing and astounding telegram from his sister. The telegram read, "Send everything you've written. Have sold your first story to S.S. McClure." And so that's how Booth Tarkington, after 8 embarrassing, heartbreaking years of rejection, finally broke into print. Monsieur Beaucaire became the rage of the nation. It was produced as a play on the stage. It was made into a movie with Rudolph Valentino. It's been set to music and sung as an opera several times. Within a few years, editors all over the country were saying to their agents, "Find us another Booth Tarkington. There's nothing like Tark to boost the circulation of a magazine. There is a man who can write." Not only could he write, but he did write. Prior to this time, he had never done a stroke of what his neighbors called real work. But now he buckled down to a grind that astonished his neighbors and everybody else. In rapid succession, he turned out novels, short stories, and plays. He wrote millions of words and wrote them all in longhand, sitting doubled up like a jackknife at a drawing board he used instead of a desk. Most of his yarns were about Indiana, or, like Monsieur Beaucaire, they were light, charming stories of historical romance. But one day his wife, who'd been watching Booth Tarkington play with his nephew, said to him, "Booth, you're always talking about boys and telling stories about boys. So for a change, why don't you write about boys?" He started thinking, why not? He'd had a wonderful time as a boy in Indiana. He could remember the time he'd found a butterfly that was injured, and he tried to patch up its wings with a bottle of glue. He remembered the time when the kids were playing post office, and he jumped out of a window when it came his turn to kiss a little girl. And he could still remember the thrill of the day he put on his first pair of long pants. Booth Tarkington was 12 when he first began to beg for a pair of long trousers. But his mother said no. He wheedled. He pleaded. He made everyone miserable. Till at last his grandfather said, "Oh, all right, I'll give you a dollar. Now take 2 pairs of my old pants down to the tailor and have them cut down to your size." The boy rushed to the tailor, and the next day he pranced off to school in his first long pants. And perhaps unintentionally, his grandfather and the tailor had played a joke on him. The front of the pants and the back of the pants were not the same color. They were different shades of black. And so when he got into the class, the other kids started laughing, and Master Booth Tarkington fled in disgrace and bolted for home. I'll be back in a moment to tell you more about the personality and accomplishments of Booth Tarkington. But first, here's Tiny Ruttner with a message from Lee Hatz.
Thank you, Dale. It's a well-known fact that you never see well-known men, men of importance and standing, going without a hat. But it's also true that the way a man wears his hat has a lot to do with his appearance, too. Now, that's one reason so many well-dressed men prefer Lee hats. They've found that it's always easy to wear a Lee hat well, because you can get a beautifully styled Lee that is already shaped and creased just the way you want to wear it and made to stay that way for keeps. You don't have to keep fussing and fiddling with it to keep it looking the way it did when you bought it. Furthermore, the Lee waterblock process makes hats soft, mellow, and extra long-wearing. So it's easy to see why Lee hats win friends and keep them. And it'll pay you to make your next hat a new Lee. Now here again is Dale Carnegie.
Booth Tarkington felt that he must have a new pair of long pants. And so he figured out a way to get around his mother. He knew that she was partial to what she called literary folks. And so he wrote a poem about her and left lying around sort of casual-like and where he knew she would find it. And then he sneaked off to wait. Sure enough, a little later, he heard his mother cry out. He went strolling in casually, his hands in his pockets. "Oh, Booth," his mother cried, and she was literally crying. "Oh, Booth, you're a genius, and to think I've been treating you as though you were a child." Well, from that time on, young Master Booth Tarkington, the poet, the author, could have long pants or anything else he wanted. And so Booth learned early in life that he could perform miracles with his pen. It was out of such stuff as this, these childhood memories, that Booth Tarkington created his unforgettable youngsters, Penrod and Sam. The whole country read about and laughed at their antics and adventures. And to Tarkington's amazement, as the years went by, he was worth $1 million. Not only that, but Princeton University, the university, by the way, that had once refused him a diploma because he didn't know Greek, now made him a doctor of literature. Another university showered him with honors until he was covered with degrees. Booth Tarkington always said that he could take in his stride all of life's troubles as they came along, all except one trouble. He always admitted that there was one tragedy in life he could never endure. He could never stand, he said, to lose the sight of his eyes. And yet, some years ago, that's exactly what he had to stand. He glanced down at the carpet in his home one day, and the colors seemed a little dim. In the course of a year, he had 12 operations performed on his eyes. He discovered, as he says, that a man could take blindness philosophically, just as he can take anything else that he has to endure. Today he can see again. At least he can see the objects around him, the ocean, the trees, and the faces of his friends. But he can't read, and he can't see to write. He dictates his stories to others. And that means that everything he writes has to be read over to him over and over again. Even the proofs from the printers have to be read 5 or 6 times. And yet no one who knows him has ever heard Booth Tarkington murmur or complain. He's lived in Paris and Rome, seen the rest of the world, but he prefers Indiana. 6 months of the year, he lives in Indianapolis, and the other 6 months, he lives in a colonial house in Kennebunkport, Maine. He's known most of the famous and celebrated men who lived in his time, but the man he admires most of all was his own father. His father was a lawyer. He had been well-to-do, but he'd lost most of his money during the depressions that followed the Civil War. Booth Tarkington was young, just a boy at the time, and he had no conception of the meaning of money. He was sent to an exclusive prep school at the age of 16, and he spent money as if it were rainwater. He bought meerschaum pipes that cost $30 each and had them charged. He ordered special cigarettes, not by the carton or by a dozen cartons, but by the gross, and had them charged. When Booth got back home at the end of the term, all he had left from his allowance was a well-worn nickel. Then came the bills. His father opened them, read them, looked at his son, and didn't say a word. He put the bills in his desk, and with almost every nail, the stack grew higher. And as time went on, the food on the table got plainer and simpler. The stables were empty, for the horses had been sold. Everybody skimped, but it was only by watching that the boy understood the hardship he had caused. It was 8 months later before Booth Tarkington's father ever mentioned the bill. And then all he said was, "Booth, I thought you might like to know that I paid off the last of your creditors today." Not a word of condemnation, not a word of reproach. That, Booth Tarkington says, was the bitterest lesson I've ever learned in my life. Never once since then have I contracted a debt that I knew that I didn't know I could pay. Booth Tarkington won success the way that almost everybody has to win it. He won it the hard way. He worked at writing not 8 hours a day. Oh, no. He worked at it 14 hours a day, and he kept on working at it 14 hours a day for more than 30 years. He would start after breakfast. His food would be left outside on a tray, and he would eat it while working. When evening came, he would go down to dinner, and when dinner was over, he'd go back to work. Often at midnight, his light was still burning. Booth Tarkington not only longed for success, but he was willing to pay the price that success demands. Now here's Tiny Ruffner for Lee Hatz, and then I'll be back to tell you about the personality that we will discuss next week. Tiny?
Thank you, Dale. Lee Hat dealers from coast to coast are now displaying 3 new feature hats for the coming spring. They are the Nile, which costs $6.50, the Highway at $7.50, and a $10 Lee style called the Dunbar. They're all permanently pre-creased just the way you want to wear them and made to stay that way for keeps. Now, if your favorite men's shop or department store doesn't always have a complete stock of Lee hats, please be patient. The Frank H. Lee factory at Danbury is also engaged in essential war work, and that must come first. But we're filling your dealer's quotas just as rapidly as possible, and you'll soon have just the Lee hat you want. A Lee hat worth waiting for. Now, Dale, what's on the program next Wednesday night?
Well, next Wednesday, Tiny, we're going to tell the story of General William Knudsen, a man who came to this country in 1899 with $30 in his pocket and became one of the 10 highest paid men in American industry. Bill Knudsen is now a 3-star general in charge of Army Air Supplies for the USA. Good night.
Next Wednesday night at the same time, same station, Dale Carnegie will again bring you his little-known facts about well-known people. This is Tiny Ruffner saying good night for the makers of Lee hats for men and boys and hat bodies for millinery. This is Mutual.